Twin Flames is an Ottawa-based band led by the husband and wife team of Yayi and Chelsea June. They fuse First Nations and Inuit music with indie folk rock, and in doing so, create a sound that is uniquely their own. They've played well over 1,000 shows, and their third studio album, Omen, dropped last year. Most recently, the band walked away from the Summer Solstice Indigenous Music Awards with 4 nominations and 3 wins, including Pop Rock Alternative Album of the Year for Omen. Yayi, Chelsea June, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
You're just coming off of 4 nominations and 3 wins at the first ever Summer Solstice Indigenous Music Awards. How does that feel?
Pretty exciting. I mean, we never assumed that we're going to get any nomination at all. And the fact that our first, transition from the folk world to the rock indie alternative world, we were pretty happy.
Back in March 2020, you had just come off of a tour through Manitoba, and you had a bunch of shows planned, but then the world shut down. How have you spent the past 15 months?
Yeah, it was kind of crazy coming home from that tour because we started to notice the shift in the airport, or the different airports, as we were getting closer to home and realized this wasn't overseas anymore. We played our final school show, and the day that we did was the day that everything shut down, like that afternoon. So I think we definitely had like a month or a few more than a month in total limbo, not knowing what we were going to do. And then we started to rely heavily on the technical world, on the virtual world. And so we had an album, well, the album that was up for 4 nominations, Omen, it wasn't finished yet. And we were almost done, but we had been touring nonstop. So it was like, oh man, how are we gonna get this thing finished and out on time and not miss a whole other potential year of not releasing? And so Yayi and our producer worked really hard to come up with this concept of building a studio at home and having our producer record us completely virtual from his home to ours. And so that's how we ended up finishing Omen, which was amazing. So that kept us super busy all throughout the summer of 2020. And then we started building our virtual stage to gear up for cultural workshops and musical performances all throughout Canada. It also helped us to play festivals internationally, all from our home. So I think we've definitely been one of the lucky ones where we found a way to continue working, and we had organizations and stuff that you know, continued to hire us, which we were super grateful for. It's going to be strange getting back to real life.
Yeah, it's weird to me hearing talk of live music coming back, and I'm super excited for it, but it's weird after so long. You met on APTN's TAM. What came first, dating or playing music together, and how did one lead to the other?
Definitely not dating. I was in a relationship still at the time, and I think the intrigue of just how easy the combination of the two voices were at the first night when we met around the fire, I think it just kind of like prolonged that moment of eventually wanting to be in a band for myself, and that's from my side. But the fact that she was the way she looks didn't hurt at all. And and then a few months later, gave her a little message and said, "Hey, I'm going to be in the Ottawa area. Want to play some music?" And luckily, she didn't call me a creep and invited me over. And then, you know, fast forward to 6 years later, we've played over. I think we've started to amass just about 1,500 shows in those 6 years, so it's been great. We love creating music together. Three of them now, 3 albums, and we featured each other in our respective solo careers in the beginning, and yeah, it's been a great ride. Mm-hmm.
What are some of the challenges of being both romantic and music partners, and what are some of the benefits?
Challenges, I would say it was definitely more at the beginning, coming in as solo songwriters and then trying to learn how to write together, because songwriting is such a personal thing. especially for me, it's like an emotional release. And sometimes it's things I wouldn't tell my closest friend. And so I guess it was just getting past that shyness as well of just being completely open and vulnerable in front of someone else and learning to respect each other's opinions and different points of view and how we could merge those together. So that was definitely one of the main obstacles we had in the beginning. A lot of frustration, but we worked through it all. And I think now it's just like a well-oiled machine. It just kind of happens organically and works. And I feel so privileged to be able to do this with the love of my life, because everything that we do is together. And so, you know, even before the pandemic, it's like we're standing up there on these major stages around the world, and you know that his lens is the same as mine, and we're seeing this and we're living this together. And it's just, it's so special. And even going virtual, it's like, you know, it's just him and I in this bubble staring at a camera, but we know there's hundreds of people on the other end of it, but we're still alone in that bubble. And so I don't know. I think this pandemic pushed a lot of couples to hate each other. But for Yayi and I, it's like we've already been in this bubble for the past 7 years. So there wasn't really anything new to it.
Yeah.
Usually it's sharing a really small hotel room. Now we had our whole house, so we were a bit better set up.
Growing up, what were some of the songs and albums that inspired you to pick up an instrument and give music a try for yourselves?
Being an 80s kid for myself, when music was starting to shift into the punk world, I still really paid attention to the classic rock of the 70s era, the folk of the 60s and 70s era, and just becoming a teenager in the 90s, listening to the Soundgarden, Silverchair, Nirvana, you know, all those amazing bands, and Stained, and I just felt like those were amazing acts that I looked up to or kind of veered towards when I went through certain things. And then all of a sudden Coldplay was a thing in the 2000s, and when I saw that first video that he made for the song called Yellow. At the time, I was still not playing guitar. I'm a very late bloomer. I picked up the guitar for a few months in 97. I was 20 years old. And then all of a sudden, I was too busy, so I stopped. And 15 years later, I decided to relearn guitar and went right into the fire, I guess.
And for myself, I think we grew up with very similar musical influences. My parents were huge music lovers. Like, there's music lovers and then there's like music fanatics. And so, like, my dad, I still remember these huge teak speakers that probably weighed like 600 pounds each on either end of our living room. And they had the old record player. And my favorite record to listen to, and my mom has pictures of me sitting on the carpet with the big headphones on, was Peter, Paul, and Mary. And it was Leaving on a Jet Plane. I could listen to that song over and over and over again. I guess which really sparked, if I think about it long term, my love for harmonies and what we do today. You know, Fleetwood Mac, Rumors, that album was just played and played and played. Timeless album. You know, my dad was a huge Beatles fan, so a lot of the music was what my parents were listening to when I was growing up. Carole King as well, as a songwriter, is just someone that I've always admired. Her album Tapestry, when I was a kid, I used to know every single word. I think I probably still do. But yeah, and I think I'm a kid that grew up in the 2000s, or a teenager in the 2000s. So, you know, Celine Dion's album for the Titanic, like, I'm going to reference it because she was just amazing. Like, a little girl growing up in Canada, you know, being French Canadian and seeing someone be able to do that with her life was just so iconic to me. And I like worshipped the ground she walked on, but I could never hit her notes. Whitney Houston, you know, was another woman that I super loved listening to. And, you know, all the greats, like all the women that came up in that time, you know, Jan Arden and Sheryl Crow and Jewel, like it was that woman power period when I was growing up.
Alanis.
And so it was really nice. Yeah, Alanis, of course, Alanis. I had like every single one of her albums. So yeah, there's been a ton of influence. I think more recently, like one of my favorite artists to listen to is Brandi Carlile. Just her songwriting again, and her new book is incredible as well. So yeah, a lot of different influences. Even though we come from different places, it's cool to see how they've all kind of melded together. Mm. Maybe not Celine or Yai, but.
Yeah, those are some really good choices. Those are excellent. Besides performing all over the world, you also run workshops on topics ranging from reconciliation to mental health and self-respect. Do you consider yourselves musicians or educators first, and how often do you find the two intertwined?
I think because music is such a medium of healing, I think we're musicians first. We just happen to write about things that that make people feel good or better about whatever poopy day they've had that day. I've said it, poopy, on radio.
Oh God.
I think in the end it's just about reaching to the right person. And there's always going to be a handful of people that are going to not engage in the music the same way as that one person might in the room or in the car somewhere. And those are the ones that end up reaching out and saying, thank you so much. You just made my day much better. And everything just kind of follows suit. And we feel that we have this platform where we can kind of have a safe space and talk about the situations that are there, where it's an ongoing conversation rather than making people feel like they've been to blame for the last 500 years. And I think most people in this day and age really feel bad about the situation. So this is the right opportunity to kind of say, hey, this is why.
Yeah, and we kind of just fell into the educator roles. We were actually touring up north in Nunavik, and we were playing a festival up there. And one of the guys came up to us, the teachers, and he said, you know, my students are fans. Like, will you come in and talk to them? Just tell them about your life and your experience. And so I still remember that day like so clearly. And we walked into that school and we started chatting with those kids, and just to see their faces light up and how much of an impact we could have was really humbling. And it kind of opened my eyes to there's more than just being up on stage and performing. Like, we can actually be doing something to try and help kids, you know, or try to make them feel less alone or more included. And like, I was that kid that was bullied and left out and just like socially awkward in every way possible. And so I think my goal through the educating stream is just to give that message that, you know, there is a life beyond school. And, you know, we grow away from those bullies and we grow away from those things that make us feel small. And that we can be anything that we dream we can be, you know, and Yai and I are proof of that. So I think that's kind of where the educating factor came in. And as Yai said, we just happen to tie in our backgrounds and where we come from. And if that helps in some small way, then we're doing our part in the grander scale of things.
You said that you hope to inspire hope and healing, and that you want to make reconciliation a conversation when you perform. And Yai, you just said that you people feel awful about the past 500 years. What does reconciliation mean to the both of you personally, and how far out of reach do you think it is at this moment?
You know, having a conversation in any capacity is all that we ever ask for when we want to resolve a situation. And having this opportunity is the window that I was talking about. And, you know, it has come a long way. Canada has come a long way, obviously. You know, they have apologized over time. And I think just having this opportunity to have the conversation for us is the evolution in all of this. And we still have a lot to learn. Everybody on a grander scale, everybody has a lot to learn about the actual situations that have happened and the latest news with the 200 now ranging closer towards the 300, 400 mark, because honestly, there is much more than that. I'm just going to tell you, it is once again another sad reminder on how the system has been swept under the rug way too often. And unfortunately, you can't hide everything. And you know, when things start to pop out like that, obviously it becomes a very uncomfortable conversation for every day, every Canadian, especially the Indigenous community. And so, you know, we just hope that we can have this platform in a safe space on our end as well, because at the end of the day, it is not that we're pointing fingers. It is that the reality is there, and every Canadian should know exactly how and why it happened.
Yeah, I really like that answer. I had family members when the stuff started coming out a few weeks ago, say they were really surprised by it, and I think that comes from just people not talking about it back then. They were older family members, because for me, I was you know, it was really, really heartbreaking, and it just made for an awful day, but. I wasn't surprised, and that I think that's the saddest part, was that I wasn't surprised. And like you said, there's that's probably the tip of the iceberg, unfortunately. So, yeah. In the past, you've talked about using music as a way to honor where you came from, and you perform music in a mix of English, French, and Inuktitut. What do you think makes music such a powerful tool for honoring your ancestry as well as educating others?
I think that we just happen to sing in the languages that we do, right? I never want to use my background as a door opener to anything, because music is in its own language. Even though I have pride in still being able to speak one of my traditional backgrounds, which is Inuktitut. And having this opportunity to talk about culture at the same time, I just feel that there are a lot of people that are standing behind us, rooting for us, because they don't get to see the big name stars in their communities, right? You know, we're the closest thing to Hollywood that a lot of the Inuit communities or the reserves may have. And we feel very honored to be able to give that. And why not give them the songs in the language? And also talking about our journey and our stories and the stories that have been told to us, our own experiences, the realities, the cultural realities. And I think that has been first and foremost our goal, is to make people understand a little bit more, because they need to be heard.
Your latest album, Omen, is a bit of a departure from your previous albums. What was more difficult to write, Omen or the Sheridan College musical In the Darkness, Show Me the Stars?
That's a great question. I would say, you know, when we're writing an album, we're way more in our element. And it's something that we've gone through the process a few times now. And so a lot of the songs on Omen actually came super naturally. Some of them had been in the works for multiple years, just weren't finished. And so when we sat down and we had to choose which songs were going to be on this album, I think it kind of came pretty naturally this time around. Writing the musical for In Darkness, Show Me the Stars was a totally different story. Ton of imposter syndrome. It was like, you know, we're working with this entire team, like a director and set designer and costume designers and, you know, script editors and all kinds of things. And so I think there was a lot of pressure around delivering something that the students were asking for. They were tired of not seeing representation within their college, and there was almost like an uprising of the students where they wanted to hear more of the stories. And so this whole musical was to push the boundaries on the traditional canon And so Yayi and I had to learn a whole lot about musicals and what a traditional canon is and all of those things. So there was a lot of research that went into it prior. But then once we kind of just let that all go, we were sitting in a hotel room in Burlington, Ontario, actually. And it was like the first live show we had played at all throughout the whole pandemic. It was in October of 2020. And the news was on, and we don't have cable. So it was just like everything was pouring in at once. It was like the height of the pandemic and the uncertainty and the racial injustices.
The fires.
It was just, you know, the world was literally burning around us. And so we sat in that hotel room. Yayi pulled out his guitar, and it just flowed, like, almost from start to finish. And that's how the musical came to be. And so we didn't change a whole lot. It was like, okay, we were so stressed about this, and now we feel like we're cheating in some way because it just happened to come out that way. But I think those messages, when they're ready to come out or come through us in a really strange way of talking about songwriting and how it comes, it was a time where those messages weren't ours alone. They were for a grander scale. And so just getting to see the actors get dressed up in, and it was so sad because the set designers built this incredible set and the actors never got to perform on set. And so they had to record in vocal booths and do their parts that way and then have them all merge together. So I'm really happy that they found a way to do it, but we're really hoping that one day we'll get to sit in the audience and watch this thing be performed.
And we're four songs closer to the next album as well.
You've been heavily featured as part of the Summer Solstice Indigenous Festival, and you're part of a drive-in concert that closes out the festival. How does it feel to return to live music, and are you worried about how a drive-in concert might affect the energy of the crowd?
Well, I think first and foremost, exciting. You know, we've been playing to a camera for a year and a half now, and just to be around the guys as well, our musicians are super ecstatic. We've been all kind of giddy, like we're going to the beach or something, and safely, of course. And I think being able to play live, even if it's to somebody sitting in their car, that's it's like we're in an episode of Cars, the cartoon. And I don't know. Like, it's going to be a first one for me, so I can't really say to the effect of being in a car versus in standing. I have yet to see that.
It's a step up from a camera,
right?
And I'm really excited. I mean, I'm a bit nervous. I struggle a lot with stage fright and anxiety, social anxiety, and so I think just being out of the game physically for a year and a half, there's going to be a lot of internal work that I'm going to have to do to kind of like psych myself up and get ready for it. But I think just having Yayi and our musicians on stage with me is always like that. Whoa, I'm not up here alone. We're all good. We're just jamming out. We're having fun and hopefully making people's day a bit brighter after the year and a half that we've all just lived.
And just lastly, is there anything else you'd like to plug, or and where can people find you?
Well, we've just released our upcoming tours going into October. And so our East Coast tour that was pushed back in 2020 is, touch wood, so far happening, starting in September. So if people go on to our socials, you can find us at www.twinflamesmusic.com. The links to all our socials are there. The tour poster with all our upcoming dates, as well as on our Facebook page, Instagram, all that stuff. You can find our music everywhere that music is listened to. So Spotify, iTunes, Amazon Music. And the easiest way is through our website. I also encourage listeners to check out our YouTube channel. We have documentaries of the incredible journeys that we've taken. So if you're feeling cooped up in your house and you want to journey somewhere else, then you come along with us and take a deeper look into what we've been up to the past 6 years.
Yeah, take a look at Sila and Rise as well. They're amazing artists. And we just happened to have Charlotte from Sila and Rise on our last two albums. It's such an honor to be able to share the stage with them again as well. And it's been an amazing journey, and we really appreciate everybody that we've been able to have a conversation with, especially you today.
Thank you so much again for giving up some of your time to be with us today. Once again, that was Yayi and Chelsea June, better known as the band Twin Flames. If you liked what you heard, you can check them out at Wesley Clover Parks tonight, where they're going to help play out this year's Summer Solstice Indigenous Festival, along with Scylla and Rise. Tickets are still available at summersolsticefestivals.ca/events. Gates open at 7, and a good time will be had by all.